box. Mr. Whitehead.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. In enacting the Federal Railroad Safety Act, Congress declared that regulations related to railroad safety shall be nationally uniform to the extent practicable. And in order to accomplish this federal objective, Congress adopted an express preemption provision in the FRSA, the Federal Rail Safety Act, that being 49 U.S.C. Section 20106. As this Court is aware, state regulations are expressly preempted where the Federal Railroad Administration, acting pursuant to its broad rulemaking authority, has prescribed a regulation covering the subject matter of the state requirement. Now, this case concerns whether or not a recently enacted Illinois state regulation, a regulation adopted by the Illinois Commerce Commission, falls within the subject matter of existing FRA regulations and accordingly is preempted by Section 20106. Alternatively, this case raises the question whether compliance by Norfolk Southern with the state rule will result in an inevitable conflict with its duties and obligations under existing Federal Rail Administration regulations, thus giving rise to conflict preemption. Now, the state regulation in question is entitled Employee Walkways in Railroad Yards, and it requires Norfolk Southern to provide a 2-foot-wide level walkway immediately adjacent to each of its tracks in any rail yards that it constructs or reconstructs after February 15, 2005, or in any portion of any previously constructed rail yard that the Illinois Commerce Commission determines poses a safety hazard to employees engaged in switching and related activities. In particular, the Illinois rule specifies the width of the walkway, it specifies the permissible slope of the walkway, and it specifies the composition of the walkways. And although the rule on its face permits alternative permissible materials to be used in forming the walkways, the testimony in the district court and the position that the parties have both taken throughout this case is that the only feasible material for the construction of these walkways is crushed rock, known in the rail industry as ballast. Now, in the district court, Norfolk Southern argued that the subject matter of the state rule falls within the subject matter of existing FRA regulations, the FRA track safety standards, and accordingly, that the state rule is expressly preempted by the Federal Rail Safety Act. And in particular, Norfolk Southern demonstrated that the ballast walkways required by the state rule will occupy the same space alongside the yard tracks in its rail yards as the shoulder ballast that supports and supports laterally the rail yards, the rail tracks.
One would think, I've tried to picture this, it would have helped to have pictures of the way these slopes work.
Mm-hmm.
But I tried to picture it, and it looked to me like it would be possible for the railroad to meet its federal obligations and comply with the state obligations by putting the tracks a little farther apart.
Well, if one were designing a completely new rail yard in which one, for example, placed the tracks 30 or 40 or 50 feet apart, then I suspect theoretically one could place...
They would have to be that far apart. It's been a long time since I took my course in trigonometry, but you can figure this out. Anyway, the state's law applies, as I understand it, only to new rail yards or renovated rail yards, and presumably that's so that you can situate the tracks in order to comply.
Well, Your Honor, one could imagine a situation in which you could place the tracks sufficiently far apart that rail yards that are in the vicinity of the track would not interfere with the shoulder ballast that supports the track or the drainage that is essential here. But here's the problem. The walkway must be sufficiently close to the track to permit the employees to perform the switching functions. It would not be sufficient, it would not make any sense to have it 20 feet away from the track.
Does the state rule actually require that?
It requires that they be adjacent. And it's very clear, Your Honor, that the purpose for the adjacency is so that they can do the switching functions. The switching functions mean not that you're 20 feet away and so that you can observe.
I understand that, but the world is full of stupid regulations that end up being complied with in a way that doesn't carry out their original goal. And it, you may have a point that this regulation is sufficiently stupid that when we design a yard that complies with all the federal rules and complies with the state rules, the walkway will be so far from the track that the only way you can perform your switching function is to get off the walkway. And that will make the regulation stupid. But there's no federal rule against stupid regulations.
Well, you're correct in that regard. Even the Federal Rail Safety Act perhaps doesn't reach to stupidity. But it is clear, Your Honor, that that's not what the state rule was intended to accomplish. The state rule was intended to provide a walkway immediately adjacent to the track so that employees could step off the walkway onto the cars, to grab on, walk up the ladders to the top of the car, that they could reach between the rail cars in order to connect and disconnect the air hoses and disconnect and disconnect the braking systems of the trains. So I agree with Your Honor's observation. This rule makes no sense whatsoever if, in fact, the walkway is placed sufficiently far enough from the track so as not to interfere with the shoulder ballast. The problem, of course, is that it was the very intent of the Illinois Commerce Commission that the walkways be immediately adjacent so that the employees who are having to step onto the rail car...
Is there some language in the state statute or the implementing regulation requiring it to be immediately adjacent, that is, to be so close that you can stand on the walkway while doing your work?
I think the language I would rely upon is the definition of switching activities in the regulation, which specifically refers not simply to observation, far enough away so you can look at the train, but actually talks about the connecting of air hoses and the throwing of the handbrakes and others. I think, Your Honor, that it would be a disappointment, I suspect, to both the Illinois Commission and to Norfolk Southern if the rationale for the decision in this case was that because the Illinois statute or regulation could be interpreted in a way that makes no sense to anyone but yet be not preempted, that it ought to be not preempted. I don't believe that that is an appropriate way to approach this. I think that the Illinois regulation clearly intends that the walkway of ballast occupy the identical location as the shoulder ballast.
Mr. Whitehead, is there any language in the state statute saying it has to be immediately adjacent?
The word adjacent is used. The word immediately, if I recall correctly, is not. I do believe the definition of switching activities, however, makes it clear that the intent of the Illinois regulation was that the walkway be used for mounting and dismounting the locomotives and the rail cars, for throwing the handbrakes, for connecting and disconnecting the air hoses. That function could not be performed unless the individual standing on the walkway has immediate access, can reach out and touch the rail car. In addition, Your Honor, the undisputed evidence was that Norfolk Southern's rail yards, for the most part, are configured with tracks that are 14 feet from center to center apart. In other words, that they're 14 feet from the center of one track is the center of the other track. With an 8.5-foot rail tie, this means that there is only approximately 4 to 4.5 feet separating the two tracks in the rail yard. What happens in that 4 to 4.5 feet? As the district court found, that 4 to 4.5 feet is totally consumed and occupied by the shoulder ballast. The shoulder ballast that is regulated by the Federal Rail Administration track safety standards. As your honors are aware, Section 103 of those track safety standards provides that shoulder ballast must be configured in such a way as to restrain laterally the movement of the track so that the track doesn't shift under the weight of the heavy train cars. And secondly, and equally as importantly, the shoulder ballast must be configured in such a way as to provide for adequate drainage, because when rail yards don't drain well, when there is standing water, it undermines the track structure. The judge found that the areas between the tracks in Norfolk Southern's rail yard is completely occupied by the shoulder ballast. She also made other specific findings that demonstrate the conflict between the state rule and the federal rule. She found, as a matter of fact, that larger sized ballast, larger rock, drains better than smaller rock. She also made a specific finding that ballast, shoulder ballast configured with a steeper slope, drains better than ballast with a narrower slope. And these are all of the concerns that the Federal Rail Administration, the flexible concerns that the FRA allowed the railroad engineers to take into account in designing the yards. Now, Norfolk Southern's rail yards, as I said, have a 14-foot center. From the end of the rail tie, there's 6 inches of shoulder ballast. Then there is a slope, at a 2-to-1 slope, down to the water drainage system. And it is that slope that will be eliminated by the filling in of the additional ballast that the state will require, essentially that the void between the two tracks, the V-shape between the two tracks. And at some point, Your Honors might want to look at the diagrams that are set forth, I think, on page 397 of the appendix. It shows this very clearly, that between the two tracks is a V down to the water source, down to the water exit points. And what the state would have Norfolk Southern do is to fill that up, to fill it up with additional ballast so that you could have a 2-foot-across level walkway for the employees to walk on. Now, that's fine, except that it interferes with the design of the track structure. It will interfere with the adequate drainage, at least at some locations within Norfolk Southern's rail yards, and therefore will make it difficult, if not impossible, at least in certain locations, for Norfolk Southern to comply with the federal regulations. Now, how did the judge reach this conclusion? She concluded that the state regulations, notwithstanding their, what the judge acknowledged was their effect on the stability of the track structure and the drainage of the track structure, she said, however, the federal regulations were not designed to provide for safety for the walking employees. The federal regulations don't make any reference to the word walkways in rail yards. And the purpose of the federal regulations was the stability of the track to keep the trains from falling off, not to provide a safe walkway for walking employees. I respectfully submit that that analysis is wrong. It's wrong as a matter of law. There is no requirement for a federal regulation to be in pari materia with the state regulation. You don't have the fact that the federal regulations don't refer to walkways doesn't answer the question of whether the regulations of shoulder ballast and the performance objectives that must be met in setting forth your, in designing your shoulder ballast covers the subject of shoulder ballast that is then to be used as a walkway. But secondly, focusing on the purpose of the federal regulation is...
What happened in the Ninth Circuit after the Southern Pacific case upheld those state regulations?
I'm not familiar, Your Honor, that there has been a subsequent Ninth Circuit case after
my question may not have been clear. I'm not asking about more Ninth Circuit cases. I'm asking about railroad yards. Have trains started falling off, or have they fallen into bogs, become wetlands as a result of the walkways in between the tracks?
A response that may not be sufficient would be that there is no evidence in this case that the railroads in the Ninth, and by the way, Norfolk Southern, of course, doesn't go into the Ninth Circuit, but there is no evidence.
But Norfolk Southern is a member of trade associations with lots of railroads, so it shouldn't be any trouble figuring out whether the railroads have become, whether railroad switching yards have become wetlands as a result of the decision 20 years ago in Southern Pacific.
Judge, there's no indication that the regulations in California and the other Ninth Circuit case, in fact, are being interpreted and enforced in those states in ways that have resulted.
At all.
I beg your pardon?
Or being observed by the railroads.
Or being observed by the railroads. We just don't know. And I apologize for Your Honor. I have not personally been in contact with my counterparts for Burlington Northern or Union Pacific to talk about the bogs that surround rail yards in Sacramento and other places on the West Coast. I just don't know. But it is clear that the Ninth Circuit decision, which preceded the Supreme Court seminal decision in the Easterwood decision, would come out the other way were it to be decided today, and that in truth, the far better decision is the one out of the Fifth Circuit in the Railroad Commission of Texas case. I see that I'm impeding on my rebuttal time. I do want to make one point, and that is that the district court it particularly erred in failing to give any deference whatsoever to the consistent position of the Federal Railroad Administration that state walkway rules such as that here in Illinois are in fact preempted because they are part of the roadbed. They're part of the track structure. And that's eminently clear in this case. We've submitted to Your Honors the amicus brief submitted by the Solicitor General on behalf of the United States and the FRA in the Railroad Commission of Texas case. I think it eloquently establishes the point that we're making here. The judgment below, we respectfully submit, should be reversed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Whitehead. Mr. Post.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Gerald Post. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, State of Illinois, and I represent the defendants' appellees, the members of the Illinois Commerce Commission in this matter. As counsel stated, there is an express exemption provision here that requires or that allows states to promulgate regulations until the Secretary of Transportation prescribes a regulation or issues an order covering the subject matter. Eastwood, of course, explained that covering is a more restrictive term than what you often see in preemption statutes that relate to provision of ERISA, for example. But again, it says that that means that the federal matter has to substantially subsume the subject matter of the relevant state law. The subject matter of the Illinois rule is a safe walkway adjacent to those areas of yard tracks where frequent switching activity occurs. Obviously, the walkway cannot be within the path of moving rolling stock. You will have to leave the walkway in any event to unhook brake hoses. So the immediacy of it is not, as just Judge Easterbrook pointed out, specified in the state statute. But the subject matter is walkways for employees in rail yards. So the question becomes, does the federal regulations subsume that subject matter? Well, in 1971, the feds considered a regulation concerning walkways. They proposed a regulation. They decided not to promulgate it because they didn't like the language. They thought it was a little too broad. They did not affirmatively decide that this area should be unregulated. They simply didn't promulgate that regulation. Now, the Norfolk Southern relies on these federal rules that provide for a stable track structure. And there is testimony in the record.
Do you know what's happened in California or any other state within the Ninth Circuit that has required walkways?
That has had since the walkways were required in 1963?
Well, they're required in California. The Ninth Circuit holds in 1987 that law is not preempted.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened? Have there been drainage or stability problems there?
I assume
that is the kind of thing that the Illinois State Commission would want to know before it promulgated its own regulations.
Yeah, I do not know specifically of evidence in the record that confirms that, but I assume that they would have considered the fact that these regulations have been in California for nearly over four decades at this point in time.
Are the regulations in California similar to the ones adopted in Illinois, different in some material way?
They are similar, perhaps.
Similar, perhaps. Does that mean you know that they are or that you don't know?
I think they require a slightly broader walkway than Illinois' rules, and I'm afraid I may be confusing that with Texas, which does require 6-foot walkways, but I think California does too. Yet the California rule.
You can be using the present tense about Texas since they were held preempted in 1991.
They were held preempted, you're right, Your Honor. The California rule, and this is on the supplemental appendix, page 26, shows a 6-foot minimum from the rail to the outside of the walkway, according to the diagram here. So it's a little different than Illinois' rule. Illinois' rule allows more flexibility, a narrower walkway. There's no evidence of record that catastrophe has hit California since those walkways went into effect.
Is there any record showing that they're being enforced or that the railroads are observing?
No, there's no specific evidence saying that they're being enforced, Your Honor. Norfolk Southern relies on these federal regulations that require that the track be supported, and there's evidence showing how that track support diminishes the load of a train down to tolerable levels at the bottom of the sub-ballast. There is testimony that a 2-to-1 ratio on the side slopes is a stable situation, that the rocks will not tumble down as rolling stock rolls across that. So the federal regulations concern that particular area. Council says that the state walkway rule will require use of ballast, and the federal rules require use of ballast, and they occupy the same space. That's not true in a three-dimensional world. In their briefs, they use the word area. But the ballast, the extra ballast that the state rule would require would be lying on top of that 2-to-1 slope necessary to support the rail track. So it doesn't add to the track's ability to support the rolling stock or add to the stability of that essential trapezoidal cross section. It's in addition to that. So the federal rules...
What does it do to the drainage?
Pardon me?
What does it do to the drainage?
According to the evidence, it... Number five stone, which is what the state rule requires, would not impede drainage. In fact, the AREMA standards,
which would not impede what?
Drainage. For use in rail yards. That's AREMA specifically says that. AREMA is a voluntary association of railroads.
English words rather than weird acronyms. AREMA, assistance.
I apologize, Your Honor. I wish I knew what the acronym
normal, is. Normal English-speaking people do not use the sequence of letters A-R-E-M-A, all in caps.
Yes. Well, there was a voluntary association of railroads that came up with guidelines, and the state rules essentially adopt those guidelines, except they make them mandatory. Now, and those guidelines say that number five...
Who are parties to this guideline? Who prepares the guidelines?
It's an association of railroads. I believe Norfolk Southern was a member at that point in time, but the difference is there were guidelines. The state rules are mandatory. And they say that the number five rock, according to their standards, would not impede drainage to such an extent that it could not be used in rail yards. And, in fact, Norfolk Southern is replacing... As it reconstructs its rail yards, it inherited some railroads with 2-inch rock instead of the number 5 ballast. It's replacing that larger rock with the number 5 ballast. So clearly, the federal law is not covering the same subject matter of the state rules, and the express preemption provision simply doesn't apply. The district court correctly found for the ICC members, the members of the Illinois Commerce Commission on that point. There is a theoretical possibility, and I think this is what you're getting at, Judge Bauer, the theoretical possibility that it might impede drainage, affect vegetation. The district court found that, however, there was a failure of proof on that point in time, or that particular subject. Initially, the Norfolk Southern presented a diagram of a rail yard. They said, this is our standard diagram. It's necessary by the federal rules, and it would show parallel tracks with a V-notch in the ballast between it. And they suggested that was necessary to meet the federal rules and that the less steep slope of the walkways would prevent that. That was countered with 60 pictures from their own rail yards at the Calumet Rail Yard, the Decatur Rail Yard, starting on page 429 of the appendix. 60 pictures showing almost flat ballast between parallel rail yards. The district court specifically found that despite the testimony of Norfolk Southern's witness, Norfolk Southern did not have a standard rail yard plan. So they found the testimony not credible. Norfolk Southern then also, the same witness, testified that there were perhaps 5 locations in the state, or at least locations within 5 of their rail yards, where one of the parallel tracks might have been a little bit more elevated than the next track, preventing creation of the walkway. Now, that testimony says that these tracks were through tracks and lead switch tracks. Now, through tracks don't have switching activity on them, so the state walkway rule won't apply to them anyway. So the testimony amounts to some unspecified number, perhaps 1 lead switch track, which is elevated. I think the testimony was somewhere as high as 2 feet above the next track. Well, we don't know if the switching tracks would be that high. It seems improbable that one would switch rail cars from one track to another with a 2-foot deviation in elevation, or at least readily do that. So there's no testimony that switching activity actually occurs at these locations or where these locations are, and it was testified to by someone whose testimony was found to be not credible. Similarly, he said there were about five locations where there were localized drainage issues requiring larger ballast. Again, same witness gave this testimony. No specifics about whether, no specifics about whether switching activity occurs there. More significantly, there was testimony from our witness that engineers deal with these localized problems day in and day out. That's their function. There was testimony from one of Norfolk Southern's witnesses that indeed Norfolk Southern could comply with the federal rules and the state rules. It was simply a matter of cost. So consequently, the evidence overwhelmingly shows that there is no conflict, no inability to conform with both the federal requirements and the state requirements.
Isn't there some language in the state rule, the new state rule, about not compromising drainage?
Yes, exactly, Your Honor. There, and the provision that requires number five ballast goes on to say smaller ballast would be better, but you don't have to use it if it would compromise drainage. Then two provisions lower, this is, I think, point 20D, talks about the walkway should be free of obstruction, and then it makes another accommodation for drainage issues right in the state regulation. And furthermore, the state regulations have a waiver provision. So if there is a situation where there is difficulty meeting both, Norfolk Southern can go to the ICC, get a waiver for that. There is no conflict. The district court found they failed to prove any conflict here, and we submit that it's correct and should be affirmed. I apologize for my voice. If there are no further questions, we ask that this court affirm that decision.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Whitehead?
The issue in this case is what is the subject matter of the federal and state regulations? Do they encompass each other? Is one within the penumbra of the other? And I would submit that the subject matter of these regulations is identical. It is the use of trackside ballast. The federal government regulations relate to and govern the use of the shoulder ballast for purposes of providing stability and drainage. The state says, no, we want the shoulder ballast to be used as a walkway. Indeed, as counsel acknowledged, what the state regulation requires is that additional ballast be placed on top of the existing ballast that is configured in conformity with the FRA regulations. Now, as Judge Bauer asked counsel, what does this do to the drainage? Well, it doesn't help the drainage. Indeed, it will significantly impede the drainage in those locations where, because of local soil and meteorological conditions, even 3/4 inch...
And that appears clearly in the record.
Yes, it does. Absolutely, Your Honor. There was undisputed testimony that there are numerous locations in existing Norfolk Southern rail yards in Illinois in which, because of local soil and water conditions, the railroad has had to use 2-inch ballast rather than the 3/4-inch ballast that it normally uses. The acronym AREMA stands for the American Railway Engineering and Maintenance of Way Association. And as your honors will see at appendix page 514, at the conclusion of their guidelines, these are just guidelines. Thank you, your honors.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.